There's an old story about a Dutch sailor who sat down to eat his dinner of herring, but it turned out that the onion he ate with his meal, it was actually a tulip bulb that was worth a lot of money, and clearly there was no going back, causing a big loss for the owner of the tulip bulb. Welcome to the Whispering Gallery. This is Suzanne Nicolaisen, and I'm glad you're joining me to figure out the secret of the missing flowers. And yes, I'm feeling a little bit like the old school Nancy Drew. I've dropped a couple of clues on Instagram while I've been doing some sleuthing on this mystery. Let's get started and dig into the shadowy garden of secrets. How were things going before the Dutch Golden Age? The Dutch built a fleet of ships for merchants, gained freedom from Spain, windmills were pumping water out to reclaim land, and that's just skimming the surface. This was a prosperous time. The Frick Collection of New York City sums up the time beautifully. Quote, "The newfound prosperity in the 17th century engendered great advancements in the arts and sciences. With surplus income, Dutch citizens enthusiastically purchased paintings and works of decorative art. What followed was an enormous surge in art production in an unprecedented variety of types and levels of quality." Unquote. North Holland, Noord-Holland, and South Holland, Zuid-Holland, are provinces of the Netherlands right off the North Sea. The word Netherlands means the lowlands. The lowest land in the area, rock bottom, is an incredible 23 feet below sea level. Holy cow. They never stop fighting off flooding and draining the water. Never stops. Windmills in the 14th century ran with scoop wheels and were set up to pump water from low areas out beyond the dikes and into rivers. The Dutch created polders that could be farmed. I had never heard of a polder before, so here's what the Oxford Languages Dictionary says they are. A piece of low-lying land reclaimed from the sea or a river and protected by dikes, especially in the Netherlands. The people could then farm and use the reclaimed land. During the Dutch Golden Age, a popular category artists painted in was still life, and drilling further into that category, floral arrangements. I think the Frans Hals Museum in Haarlem, Netherlands, describes the flower painting best on their webpage displaying Flower Still Life by Hans Gils Bollinger, 1644, Oil on Wood. They said, "A bouquet of striped tulips, a rose, an orange lily, a red and white carnation, stalks, and a cyclamen. This is an imaginary bouquet." Were these Schilders van Bloemen, painters of flowers, early fantasy botanical artists? Recording flowers and sometimes insects, often incorporating broken tulips into their compositions. Broken tulips were a clear favorite of many of the painters. We'll talk about what broken tulips are soon. If you're like me, you might be surprised that tulips didn't originally come from Holland. Tulips grew wild in the valleys of the Heavenly Mountains or the Tian Shan Mountains of China. So how did tulips end up in Holland? There are so many questions, right? It wasn't from point A to point B. They arrived in Holland via an ambassador to Turkey, who brought some tulip bulbs home to Vienna from the Turkish Sultan, Suleiman the Magnificent. The ambassador then gave some tulip bulbs to a botanist, who then took them home to the Netherlands. This last step led to wealthy Dutch wanting to add tulips to their gardens. I'm not sure how complicated the journey was to tulips becoming an instantly recognized symbol of the two provinces of Holland, but Holland and tulips complement each other like peanut butter and jelly. Where is Holland? Europe, right? Very funny, I know. The hazy that-away gesture doesn't count. I mean, Europe's a big place with a lot going on. I went to look at a map to see exactly where the Netherlands and the provinces of Holland are located. I didn't know they were across the pond from the UK. Which pond? Well, the North Sea, if seas count as ponds, quote, too. Since I'm in the United States, that's where I'll start, on the East Coast. Head northeast across the cold Atlantic Ocean toward the United Kingdom. From London, continue across the North Sea, and bingo, the Netherlands. Most likely landing first at the provinces of South Holland and North Holland, which are located right on the coast. From what I've read, even in the 18th century, the Netherlands were a bit on the wet and cold side for tulips. Although you'd never know that now for how well established the flowers are. Broken tulips are delicately striped with feathery color that also touches the edge of the petals. You may notice that many of the Golden Age flower arrangement paintings integrate broken tulips into their compositions. Unfortunately, broken tulips weren't pretty just because they grew that way naturally. The beautiful markings were caused by a mosaic virus that was spread among some of the tulips, courtesy of fruit tree aphids. This is what made a standard tulip a broken tulip. The broken bulb tulip wasn't just a solid standard color, but had the feathery stripes of color on the petals and along the edges of the petals. If there was a root at the bottom of the tulip bubble, it would be the slow-growing stunner Semper Augustus, a popular broken tulip. The word semper in Latin means always, and Augustus in classical Latin means majestic, great, or venerable. That's a pretty grand name, always majestic. Growing broken bulbs wasn't a sure bet because nobody knew for sure that a tulip was going to break. The University of Chicago wrote about the broken tulip Semper Augustus, quote, "Of all tulip varieties, it was the variegated flowers that most bewitched the Dutch. The contrast in coloring, such as red, rosen, and purple, violetten, against a white ground or against yellow, bizarden, was caused by a virus that beautified but also weakened and eventually killed the bulb." They continue. "With blood-red flares or flames, vividly streaked on a white ground, the color displayed as thin feathers or flames symmetrically running along the center, and flakes of the same color at the edge of the petals. Semper Augustus was, by all accounts, a most remarkable flower, and one celebrated at the time for its beauty and rarity, and because it was desirable, it was costly, and because it was scarce, it was coveted." As we continue to unravel the mystery surrounding the missing flowers on multiple canvases in process across the studios of Dutch artists of the Golden Age, you may be surprised or not to hear that they left sections of their canvases intentionally blank. Why weren't these paintings being completed? So what are the clues? When you think of Holland, what comes to mind? Is that even a fair question? We've been talking about tulips after all. I mean, it's obviously donuts, right? Okay, hang in there with me for a minute. You know I love my little side detours, and this is a quick one. In a nutshell, Dutch colonists settling in New York, New Amsterdam, made oliekoeken, now called oliebollen. And English, in the U.S., we call them donuts. Let's get back to the puzzling mystery before us and take a more serious look at the question, when you think of Holland, what comes to mind? More realistically, the answer might be windmills or clogs Edam cheese, dikes to fight off the sea, and of course the answer I'm looking for is tulips. If you've seen the pictures of huge fields of tulips in bloom, broad stripes of color across the landscape, even from afar, they're stunning. I don't know about you, but I think we may all feel better now that tulips have been mentioned. The following is a quote from Coraline by Neil Gaiman. But I have always thought that these tulips must have had names. They were red, and orange and red, and red and orange and yellow, like the ember in a nursery fire of a winter's evening. I remember them. Prior to the tulip mania of 1636, what made tulips so popular? The experts believe the popularity of tulips started, wait for it, because for me this was totally out of the blue. They believe it was caused by a fashion trend. Fabric with flowers on it, including tulips, was made into gowns, and that became a popular trend. Let's take a look at one of the clues to the mystery. You can see the painting on Instagram. The painting is A Still Life of Flowers in a Wanley Vase, 1614, by Ambrosius Bosschaert the Elder. I'm not sure if I got his name right. It was in the National Gallery. What flowers are we looking at in the painting, and when do they bloom? The flowers in the painting include daffodils, blooming from February to March, tulips, March to April, cabbage roses, April to June, peony, April to June, iris, mid-spring to mid-summer, marigold, spring to fall, lily, early summer to fall. And there's more, but that's the gist of it. In 1614, is it likely an arrangement could have been made of all of these at one time? Now, what about clue two? Check out the painting on Instagram to see what I'm talking about. This painting is found at the Frans Hals Museum, titled Flower Still Life by Hans Gilles Bullinger, 1644. It's an oil on panel, 27 by 20.5 centimeters. They say, quote, a bouquet of striped tulips, a rose, an orange lily, a red and white carnation, stalks and a cyclamen. This is an imaginary bouquet. Okay, two clues, and all of the flowers are present and accounted for in the paintings referenced on Instagram at the Whispering Gallery podcast. So, what's the deal with the secret of the missing flowers? Where are the flowers missing? I was lucky to hear about the mystery of the missing flowers from my daughter, our past co-host, Emily. She majored in fine art and has some seriously interesting stories about art. Emily told me that the Dutch painters had come up with an ingenious solution for painting their flower arrangements from life. No photographs available, they would leave sections of their canvases blank on purpose, saving a spot for flowers not yet in bloom to be painted when the flowers could be referenced in real life. The secret of the missing flowers is that the artists would wait for each of the flowers to bloom during whatever time of the year they bloom in, and then paint them into the composition. They would omit the flower until that time, even having to wait for the next year on occasion. Each painting is a puzzle piecing together calendar, canvas, and the wit and project management skills of the artist. The clever solution and thinking outside of the box brought flowers from across the seasons together. Still lifes were not all done of flowers. There was also silver containers, clear glass, nuts and bread, food, and citrus fruit being peeled, the peel still attached, coiling off, insects, and other artists were working yet on landscapes and portraits, among other things. So I mentioned the tulip bubble, so let's get into that for just a minute to explain what that is and how it relates. In the meanwhile, painters were painting, flowers were blooming, and an illegal tulip market had sprung up during the winter of 1636. After the tulip market had closed, the buyers and sellers would meet in pubs, as colleges, to buy and sell bulbs, without the tulip bulbs being present. This was called windhandel, which meant trading in wind. This was considered gambling and was illegal, which has everything to do with why this sudden crazy rise in tulip bulb prices didn't affect the Dutch economy. And when the tulip bubble crashed, more likely it affected the individuals involved in the windhandel. The trades wouldn't be finished until the tulip bulbs went on sale in late spring. Tulip bulbs could only be out of the ground after blooming and had to be planted back in the ground in the fall. This meant the tulip bulb market was active during June through September, when bulbs could be dug up, sold, and replanted. My mom was all about her garden. She had microclimates and she was totally about it. She watered the sections differently, and she taught me to leave the tulips alone after they had bloomed until the stems dried out, and when you could pull on the stem, it comes off the bulb and the bulb is left in the ground. She said that the stem is feeding the bulbs until that point. This seems to work, and it lines up with when the tulip bulb market is active, actually. Prices of tulips started to rise in 1634. The most expensive broken bulbs were hundreds to thousands of Dutch guilders. The standard bulbs, more modestly, took after the broken bulbs, increasing in price by up to 20%. One broken bulb could be worth as much as a house, and furnishing that house. I had read that that might be a canal house, one of the large ones lining the canals. The Dutch involved in windhandel were betting on future price changes rising so they could sell before it fell. People who didn't own bulbs were selling to people who didn't want to even possess the bulbs. Some argue that this doesn't sound like cryptocurrency, like Dogecoin or Bitcoin, but it kind of does to me as a layperson on the subject. The tulip bulbs were a hope of things to come, full of possibility, that may have lit many hearts during the short days and long nights of winter, with an uncertain future ahead. In Crashes and Crises, Lessons from a History of Financial Disaster by Connell Fullenkamp, PhD of Duke University, he focuses on the tulip bubble. Mr. Fullenkamp explained the situation as being an asset bubble, which is, quote, the upward departure of an asset's price from a reasonable level. The tulip bubble may have been accidental or caused by uncertainty. They don't know 100% for sure. They do know that when everyone tried to sell at once in the second week of February, 1637, the tulip bubble collapsed. Since windhandel was illegal, contracts were enforced privately. People started not meeting their commitments and were settling at a fraction of the contracted value. Alexandre Dumas wrote a book about the tulip bubble called The Black Tulip. This was on my parents' bookshelf, and I had read it long ago, and a few years ago, I read the book aloud and recorded it to CD, a homemade, fairly obscure book on tape for my mom, who had trouble with her eyes. So, are we talking The Three Musketeers and The Man in the Iron Mask, Alexandre Dumas? It's the same one. Here's a quote from The Black Tulip. And then, after the first blush of the admiration which he could not help feeling, he began to be tortured by the pangs of envy, by that slow fever which creeps over the heart and changes it into a nest of vipers, each devouring the other and ever born anew. You can find The Black Tulip on Amazon, published under Penguin Books. The paintings of flower arrangements from the Dutch Golden Age were camouflaged as simple, beautiful paintings of flowers, arranged just right, each flower in full bloom. If we were to stop to consider and admire one of these paintings of flowers, we may glaze right over the fact that if we were to try and gather such a bouquet in real life from a home garden, aside from a botanical garden or greenhouse, we would, in all likelihood, not be able to. Many of the flowers bloom one after another through spring and into summer. Daffodil, then tulips, roses, then lilies, for example. I hope you've enjoyed the detective work we've managed to work through together. By the way, given the complexity of these paintings, are you at all surprised that M.C. Escher is Dutch? But his story is for another day. The schedule that the flowers follow, I have watched closely while doing my research this spring, watching the daffodils come into bloom, then the tulips coming into bloom, and some came later than others. Then a small rose bloomed, and the peony then bloomed, and then the lilies still have not bloomed. They're getting close, but won't be probably another 1 or 2 weeks. So that's where I'm getting that in real life, when you watch this happening one after another, you wouldn't have a whole bouquet at once of them. Thank you so much for following me down the winding path from the heavenly mountains in China, through a brief minute of fashion history, and at last to the studios of the resourceful and smart artists of the Dutch Golden Age. You've been listening to The Whispering Gallery. This is where we wrap up the mystery, so I'll share a bit of news and my thank yous. Since Twinkie and Cookie moved up to Montana and were adopted, we are fostering our next dachshund, Marta and Pinata. They're senior dogs. One of the things with Pinata, there's been some discussion if Pina would be like a pineapple and Ita, a word to indicate small feminine, would her name actually be Pina Ita? Like little pineapple? We were just thinking it over. The two are a bonded pair and are staying with us, and we're doing our best to keep them happy and healthy and get them ready to be adopted. In the meanwhile, Shotzi and Boomer are doing good. If you like this story about the secret of the missing flowers, I hope you'll share it or one of your favorite episodes with a friend or family. So if you would do me a favor and please rate and review the Whispering Gallery podcast when you have a free minute, that would help other people decide if they want to listen to the podcast or not. This episode came together with the help of the following books, people, and online resources. Many thanks to the following: the Internet Archive for our music, Great Courses Plus for the Crashes and Crises lessons from A History of Financial Disaster with Connell Fullenkamp, PhD of Duke University, Creative Commons, the Frans Hals Museum, Wikipedia, Wikimedia, the University of Chicago, post about Semper Augustus tulips, Google Translate, freesound.org, whiteflowerfarm.com for types of tulips, teleflora.com for 10 weird facts about tulips, thefactsite.com for tulip facts, past exhibition of the Dutch Golden Age from frick.org, A Concise History of the Netherlands by James C. Kennedy, and I was able to get a used copy of Flowers in Nature, Netherlandish Flower Painting of 4 Centuries by Sam Segal, The Black Tulip by Alexandre Dumas, My Mom for Her Gardening Advice, InterestingEngineering.com for History of the Tulip from Turkish Love Affair to Dutch Tulip Mania Obsession, and DW.com for information on the Semper Augustus, and Holland.com. Do you have any stories from your studio, art class, gallery, or museum, or about art that falls into the realm of spooky art, art history, stories, or art hauntings, things of interest or that are strange in the art world? Send your suggestion for a story, or just say hello at whisperingcontact@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram. It's always great to hear from you. If you'd like to purchase a Whispering Gallery skull pin, visit the Etsy store at etsy.com/shop/Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, Nikolaisen, N-I-K-O-L-A-I-S-E-N, art. The writing and production of the Whispering Gallery podcast and copyright are held by Suzanne Nikolaisen. If you would like to support the podcast, visit buymeacoffee.com/suznikart to help cover the cost of books, audio, and our podcast hosting. Look for us on Instagram at Whispering Gallery Podcast. Thank you so much for your company and for listening. Keep your flashlight close and your spooky art stories closer while visiting the Whispering Gallery.